Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, we are continuing in an eight-week series, or an eight-week training, really, it's a training, on small group leadership. And we're calling this the basics of small group leadership. And what we're doing in these 8 weeks is it's really more training on how we as a small group-based church do small groups. And it's good training for the small group leaders and the future small group leaders. It's great training for those who are in small groups to know what to expect and how things work and how things operate and all that. And so we're taking these 8 weeks because we're about to kind of like relaunch the church. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when the Lord had us launch Forerunner Fellowship, the Lord made it really clear when we started that we weren't going to like grow immediately, that we weren't going to like launch like a lot of churches launch. And I kind of have a sense that this relaunch, if you will, or us going into our own building and getting our own space, is a little bit more of an official launch. And so it's important that we get our ducks in a row. And so as a small group-based church, we're spending these weeks going through the basics of small group leadership. And it's just a few nuggets each week and a lot of repetition because I want us to get this stuff. And so this is session three, and I've entitled it Taking Spiritual Responsibility. And so we're going to talk about that term here in a little bit. But what we're going to be doing in tonight's session is we're going to be kind of expounding more upon last week. Last week we were talking about, you know, what it looks like from a biblical perspective to, you know, be in people's lives and to have the role of pastoral leadership. And now we're going to talk a little bit more in the specifics of what it looks like in our context. And this will give you some more practicals. My hope every week is to give some practical instruction on how to be a small group leader. Because in our context, in our world, probably most of you will be small group leaders at some point. I mean, you don't have to, but most of you probably will. And so it's good for you to be hearing these ideas, what it looks like, what does the discipleship model look like in our context, and rooting it back to Jesus and the New Testament church and what they were doing there. And so we want to clarify some responsibilities of what our small group leaders do. And it's essential for us to know what that looks like, because I think that small groups are going to be growing here in just a short bit. We're going to have a lot of new faces in here, and we want to get them integrated into small groups. And it's good for you who aren't leading a small group to know what to expect, but it's also good for you to know what the new person that just gets involved in our church should expect, so that you can go tell your friends, hey, come and get involved in our church, or whatever you do, don't get involved in our church. Our church is weird. At least you'd know that it's weird, you know, so that you could warn them. So what I want to do tonight is I want to talk a little bit about the soberness. Now, I've been doing small group ministry for, you know, 19 years. I love it. I think it's awesome. I really do believe it's the way to go. I really do. I think it's the wisdom of the Lord. It provides so many of the missing components that church life in our modern context lacks. I love it. I think it's awesome. But it is a weighty responsibility. It's weighty. It's not for the faint of heart. It is not light and trite. It matters. And so I feel like tonight, if I'm going to be honest and be a good shepherd, I don't want to just talk about how awesome it is and just kind of throw everybody in the deep end. I want to give us a little bit of the weightiness of it and talk about what that looks like and how and why. And so I put on here a couple of verses that I just want to talk about on that point, providing a window into how things look. We've got Matthew 5:37, and then also Luke 14. And in Jesus, in his teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, he gave this incredible phrase that really should matter for all of our lives, in every area of our life. But I want to relate it specifically to small group ministry, and that is, let your yes be yes. I'm specifically talking to the small group leaders. It is a weighty responsibility to take on a small group, and therefore lives of people that you're going to be a part of and invest in and go through thick and thin and all that stuff. And it's important that we recognize that when we enter into that relationship as a small group leader, it's a big deal. And it's important that we make our yes, that we're doing our best to really weigh the value of that, the importance of that, because it's something that we're saying that we're going to be committed to that person and help them, and it's powerful, and it matters. I want to encourage us as small group leaders, as those that will become small group leaders, that kind of, as those that will expand our small groups, all of those different aspects, I want to encourage us with the words of Jesus out of Luke 14. Suppose that one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost? Count the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it. For if you lay the foundation and you are not able to finish it, everyone will see it and ridicule you, saying this person began and wasn't able to finish. I don't think so many people are going to walk up to us and say, you weren't able to do it. I don't think that's really going to happen. But I do think that the value of the statement of Jesus saying, before you become a small group leader, count that cost. Before you have your small group grow from 3 to 20, count that cost. Count the cost because you're taking spiritual responsibility for a handful of people. And in all honesty, it's probably not a wise idea to take spiritual responsibility for more than you can actually keep spiritual responsibility for. And so that's an important detail. I've had these sessions, all 8 sessions of this, I've had, in my heart, and I've been drafting for months and months and months. And I can remember, a few months back when I started this session on spiritual responsibility and getting ready to teach this a few months ago, I remember my heart just once again going, it's a weighty thing. It's cool. I like it. I wouldn't trade it, but it's weighty. It matters. I want to identify this term, taking spiritual responsibility, because that's kind of an interesting phrase. If you've never heard those words put together, those 3 words put together in that way, kind of means something very interesting. The idea is that we would carefully and prayerfully look after a few people. Carefully and prayerfully look after a few people. I think all of those words, if you're ever going to take notes on anything, of course, I think these notes are available. If they haven't been emailed to you, they can be or will be or should be or something. Carefully and prayerfully look after a few people. So the intentionality that you're investing into them, the taking their life in God seriously. I mean, just think about that. What an interesting term. Taking their life in God seriously. Not your life in God. I hope you're doing that already. Taking their life in God seriously. Looking at their life in God and going, I care about where they're at with Jesus. Not just lost, saved, but saved and discipled and growing and maturing and taking it seriously, looking at yourself as a spiritual mentor in their life, responsible to see them mature as best as you can. Looking at their life in God and going, I'm going to do what I can to invest into their spiritual maturity. I'm going to actually take offense at my own self if after 2 and 3 and 5 years, they're not any more mature in Christ than when I started with them. That's going to bother me because I'm going to invest in them and I'm going to try to help them get to that next place in God. This is sober. That's serious. Now, it's so kingdom. It's so normal. This is so what Jesus told everybody to do, but it's totally not American. This is not what we do in America. We make it everybody else's responsibility to take care of our stuff and help people and figure things out. We never take responsibility for others. We don't ever take responsibility for ourselves, just in general in culture. To take spiritual responsibility for others, it's a weighty deal. But I want to balance that term, taking spiritual responsibility. I want to give you the word influence as opposed to control. Control is ridiculous. Don't touch control. Don't do control. You're not in control of their life, but you are absolutely supposed to influence them. You're supposed to influence them towards Jesus. It's important that you do. Philippians 3:17 says, join together in following my example. Brothers and sisters, just as you have us as a model, keep your eyes on those who live as we do. This is Paul talking about the power of influence. He's saying, I want you guys to pay attention to your leaders. I want you to watch them. Leaders, I want you to be watchable. I want you to pay attention to the way that they live their lives and then do your best to influence people to live godly lives, to live in a way that models after Jesus. Control would be, you will do this. This is how it is. That's dumb. Don't do that. No one would listen to you. And it wouldn't be helpful anyway. You'd remind them of like angry father figure or something. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, look, this is what the word says. Let me help you do it. I'll do whatever I can. Let's get you to this. It's encouragement unto the purposes of the Lord in their life, as opposed to controlling. So anywhere where there's control, like, work that out of you. Like, don't have that. That's not what we're talking about. But you absolutely are supposed to help and influence and take responsibility. And I'll just tell you, as somebody that's been doing this for a couple of decades-ish, the issue of influence and control, the enemy is constantly, as a small group leader, trying to get me to go step in there and take control of that situation. Well, I know the voice of the Lord. I know the voice of the enemy too. You got to tell the enemy to go stick it somewhere. And you got to go, no, but I am going to continue to try to influence them to make right decisions. I am going to continue to try to help and encourage and exhort in the right direction. But ultimately, they're going to do whatever the heck they want to do. And that's not your responsibility. You can't. What can you do? All you can do is influence. Don't get into control. But man, this is a big commitment. I mean, this is kind of like parenthood with adults. You know, I mean, you're talking about trying to get into the lives of people. And small group leadership, it's a big commitment because it's a decision that we're willing to invest into that few, that we're willing to take that spiritual responsibility, that we're willing to take on a small group, and that we're willing to lead them every way we can, perhaps with no end date. At least not an end date that we start off describing. The Lord might move you to Montana. Lord, please don't move too many of them to Montana, but my point is, like, you don't know what the future holds. You just make your plans as best as you can and go, look, I'm going to minister to you and be in your life as long as I can be. You know, I'm here. I'm here for you. That's a big commitment to somebody. And that's how we do small groups. We don't do the Bible study version that starts over every semester and the people come in, do the Bible study, and then they leave, and next semester you get a different group of people. We're not doing that. We're not about that at all. We're about spiritual mentorship, discipleship, taking spiritual responsibility for people. And that's not for a week or a month or a year. That's, it's just that's, dot, dot, dot. And so it's a big commitment. Now, it's also the most rewarding thing. It's relational discipleship. Now, give you a kind of a contrast here. There's probably a number of different ways. I mean, I could think of a few. A number of different ways to approach discipleship. Like I said, the Bible study model. Everybody come, let's do these. We've got, three tracks, and each track has got 10 teachings in it. And if you graduate track one, you're ready to go to track two. If you graduate track two, you're ready to go to track three. By the time you graduated track one, two, three, you are discipled. I don't think so. After 30 teachings, you've had 30 teachings. And that's good, but that is not discipled. And that is not the model of discipleship that we're approaching things with. We're relational. I see Jesus, who's a real human, who liked this kind of hummus better than that kind of hummus. I mean, he did. He liked walking on this side of the road as opposed to that side of the road. He had preferences and he did stuff. He was a human, fully God, fully man. And as a fully man, part of things, he had relational discipleship. He said, come on, guys, follow me. And he talked to 12 dudes. And to 12 dudes, he said, go where I go, do what I do, eat what I eat. By the time I'm done with you, you'll like hummus the way I like it too. 12 guys that he was in relationship with, and he was discipling along the way. I don't know that the standard every day of their life was Jesus prepare a sermon for the 12 at night. And then, like, give them the sermon. I don't think that's what was happening. I think Jesus would be walking through life and go, hey, don't be like the Pharisees. They've got, my goodness, they've got a wrong attitude. Hey, you two are arguing about who's going to be the best ever. Like, you're awesome. Yeah, you're really not that awesome. Quit that. He was teaching them as life went on. He was in relationship with them, close relationship, and he was discipling them as they went. He was dealing with real life circumstances, real life situations. He was close enough in their life he could speak right into it. That's relational discipleship. And I think it's really the only version of discipleship, because the truth of the matter is they already have the Bible. So if they're just reading it, they will get all of the Bible lessons, but that does not mean they know how to live for Jesus. Discipleship is about you teaching them the things that you've learned about how to handle that situation, what to do with that person, what to do when your emotions are flaring, what Bible verses to go to deal with that area or that weakness or that issue. But it's relational as opposed to systematic theology being spoon-fed to them. So that's actually the reason that, like, We're always like, if your small group never has a Bible study in it, that's okay with us. Just disciple them. You go, well, it's a lot easier to prepare a Bible study once a week than it is to disciple these people. Great, then you understand. So have less people in your small group because you need to disciple them. That's the objective, not spoon-feed theology. Your job is to disciple them that they are further along in their relationship with Christ and more mature in a year and two and five. That's the objective of small group leadership. Kind of intense. 1 Thessalonians 2:8. This is really what it's all about. 1 Thessalonians 2. Yeah, look at that. We cared for you. Because we love you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel, but our lives as well. That's discipleship. Not just theology, not just the message, not just the word, but you need the word. The word is the basis for everything that comes out of your mouth, but it's not the basis in the form of like a Bible teaching every time you're interacting with them, okay? And Paul says, we cared for you. We loved you. We were in your life. We wanted to be in your life. It wasn't a burden to us. We liked you. And because of that, because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only Jesus, the gospel, Bible teachings, we were willing to share with you our lives, let you see how we eat hummus, let you see how we do this, let you see into our lives to see these aspects of our life. That was what it was about. This was Paul's model. This was the way that the New Testament church worked. And we don't know all the ins and outs. I don't think it was our model of small group leadership, but it was absolutely relational discipleship. They were in the lives of those that they were ministering to. Let me give you a few components of relational discipleship in the Forerunner Fellowship context. One, they're meeting in your home. You know how vulnerable that is? You don't clean the toilet? They know it. They use your dirty toilet. They judge you. Dirty toilet, small group leader. Dirty toilet. They know you. They know your weaknesses. They know what's in your fridge. They know what's in your fridge. They know what's in your pantry. They know where you keep things and do things. And they know intimate details about you. That's vulnerable. That's sharing your life with them. Most of you, if you start a small group, most of you will wind up having your small group in your living room. And that means they're over at your house and they're in your midst. That's good. That's not a bad thing. Actually, the first century church, Philemon 1:1-2, to Philemon, our dear brother and fellow worker, also to Apphia, our sister, and Archippus, our fellow soldier, and to the church that meets in your home. How many people can you get in a home? Not 500. You got a group of people. And often you'll see in the New Testament this terminology of those that were meeting in the home. Well, we know that the churches in these regions, the number of disciples exceeded that which could fit in one house by a long shot. So there were small groups, call them whatever you want, home churches, the church meeting at five homes because they didn't have a general assembly place, call it whatever you want, I don't care. The point is they were in people's homes. And that's a measure of vulnerability. It's a measure of relational discipleship. I mean, I don't know about you, but I make a point to get to know anybody who's in my house. Okay, I don't just leave the front door open and say, come ye, come all, hang out for 5 minutes, take whatever you want and leave. I mean, like, I get to know people that come in my house. And that's part of the point. Second component of relational discipleship. Not just that you have the group over for the weekly meeting, but you're having individuals or couples or two threes or over or whatever for dinner for time to time. You don't have to eat dinner. It could be lunch or snack or hang out, but I think food's a good deal. Having them over in a more individual way into your home as opposed to only the group setting. Because the truth of the matter is more happens in 30 minutes with a one-on-one than 20 meetings with the group. And it's actually the grace of the Lord that so much can get done. I mean, like a power punch. So much can get done in 30 minutes with a one-on-one than even the group setting. But the truth of the matter is you probably won't have time to have group one-on-ones every day of your life, every person all the time. I mean, that's not realistic. So you want to sprinkle a little of that in. you're having the group over to the house every week, and then you're intentional to meet with them one-on-one, couple-on-couple, whatever it is, in small settings, and have them over to your house for dinner or lunch or hangout or coffee or whatever. Like, have them over into your home, but once again, you're spending time with them. It's relational. So far, have I said anything that sounds like a Bible study? But that's the model that we're so used to, and I think it's ineffective. I actually think that what we're talking about right now is one of the reasons that America is in such a hot mess. I think there is so little discipleship in the church in America that the church in America just does whatever they want, thinks whatever they want. I mean, the crazy stuff that proclaiming Christians say and believe, it's because they weren't discipled. I mean, because no one taught them better. No one helped them process through. When they were trying to come to, do I believe abortion's okay or not? There was no one there to help them through that dialogue. When they were trying to come to, what do they do with their money? There was no one to help them through. So they just came up with their own plan, their own ideas, their own interpretations. They needed somebody holding their hand. And it's not like we came up with the idea. It's in the Bible. The concept's in the Bible. I think this is actually a significant reason that we're in such a state that we are in the culture of the church in America, is a significant lack of discipleship. So, meeting in your home, having them over for dinner, calling, texting them. Now listen, I don't think that, let this look a lot of different ways. I just want to say it this way. Relational discipleship is more than your meetings. It's more than the time that they come to your living room and that one time every 6 months or whatever, year, 5 year, what, however often that they come over for dinner. It's more than that. It's relational. And so it's text messages. It's little encouragements. It's phone calls. And that works two way. And it evolves. It develops. In fact, I was thinking about this earlier, how if in a year and two and five, your relationship with those that you're discipling hasn't matured and morphed, there's something wrong. Because it means they're not growing. Or it means that you got a Messiah complex and you still want to be there for every little Band-Aid bruise. You know? Like, things should be evolving. So actually, your communication as time goes on will evolve as well. And it doesn't need to be so hover over a baby to make sure that he or she doesn't fall off the changing table. You know? I mean, it's like you can be a little bit more at a distance. There can be that growth in communication, but still communication. The point is, in relational discipleship, it goes beyond the meeting. There's interaction. One of the things I love about the way that we do life around here is we keep you busy on purpose. It's on purpose because you're going to be busy doing something, either serving the devil or serving Jesus. So if we can keep you in three meetings a week, coming to Sundays, you're involved in a small group, and you're over at the prayer room at a Sacred Trust once a week, that's three times a week we're keeping you out of trouble. And it's also three times a week we've got an opportunity to bump elbows. Hey, how you doing? What's going on? You know, what's up? How are things? It's relational. So then sprinkle in a few text messages here and there, phone call every now and then, and boom, you got a party, folks. I'm excited. This is good preaching. I'm feeling it right now. All right. So love them also in the group settings. This is just a little freebie for you, okay? This is one of those I've kind of learned over the years that is a reality, especially in the early months and year or two of discipleship with somebody new. And that is, that individual that you're discipling, they need to feel honored and loved in the group settings just as much as in the individual, or not just as much, but at least acknowledged. I'll give you for instance. So you're in small group. You got two or three people in your small group. You're excited. You took them out to lunch. Man, you've been like, you know, texting them. It's been awesome. Everybody's great. You come to church on Sunday night and you don't say hi to them. You're in trouble. They're all of a sudden offended and confused. Now, maybe it was just because you were busy, but they're mad at you. They are mad. So it's important that when you see those that are in your small group, you're giving them attention. You know, so you see them out at the mall or you see them at the movie night or whatever. I'm like, say hi. You know, make sure that they know that you love them and you are their small group leader in that setting, just like you're their small group leader in the living room. That it happens all over the place, that you are still their small group leader in all those different settings. It's important. And again, that's mostly for those that you're really building those new relationships with. It just helps root some security. That's so helpful. It's so important to the relationship. Love them well. I just want to say this, the primary objective in all of this, in our relationship with them, isn't that it model this, it has to look this way, you have to meet it this time, you're gonna, all of those are helpful components to get you to the end goal. The end goal is love them well. That's the objective. Love them well. Be in their life, love them well. Help them feel that love. Help them feel like they can trust you. Hopefully they can. And if they can't, well then talk to your small group leader about why. Let's work that out so that then you can be trustworthy. But to be a trust, not just a trustworthy source of counsel, not just a trustworthy like friend in their life, but a trustworthy source of love. What a great thing in a loveless culture, in a culture that's so confused and calls this stuff love, which totally isn't, and calls this stuff, which is love, not. I mean, we're in a confused culture. What a great thing to know there's somebody in your life that's got your back. To know there's somebody in your life, I know if I go there, I'm going to get loved on my bad day. I mean on my bad, mad day. Mad, bad, Brad day. I'm coming at you. Love me as I am. And to know because of history with that individual that you're going to get loved. What a powerful component goes a long way. This doesn't even, just as a small group leader, I'll just say this. It's not primarily about you having wise or amazing counsel. It just needs to be godly and filled with love. The Lord will help work all the rest of that out, I promise. Just be godly and be lovely, filled with love. Love them big time. And then if everything you say sounds stupid, they will forgive you and still come back for love tomorrow. It'd be great. But if you give them great counsel and don't show them love, it doesn't touch. It doesn't touch the heart. So the small group discipleship, taking spiritual responsibility, it's all about loving people. We use this term around here, this term taking spiritual responsibility. It means all the stuff that we've been talking about, really in the last three sessions, and the stuff we've been covering tonight so far. I feel like this term, taking spiritual responsibility, is important because I think it helps bring out of the stars, the stratosphere, out of nebula, helps bring down what we mean when we're talking about being a small group leader. Like, what the heck does that term mean? What does a small group leader mean? What does it mean to be a leader in somebody's life? What does small group leadership mean? What does discipleship mean? Take spiritual responsibility for that individual. I think that term clarifies so much. That term doesn't tell you the 40 things that the term means, but that term does tell you what your role is. That term does show you what your job in their life is. That term does show them what your job in their life is. Taking spiritual responsibility. I just care enough about you. I care about your destiny in God. I am going to stand with you. I'm going to be somebody in your life that's going to take your walk with God seriously, and I'm going to be there for you, and I'm going to help you get to that next place in God, whatever it takes. I'm going to take spiritual responsibility for you. It's powerful, and it's so safe. It is the safest thing. I am the most blessed man in the world, and my wife is better off because I've got somebody who's taking spiritual responsibility for me who cares about me and Amy. It is better. It is better for everybody that I've got somebody in my life that's done that, and it's better for you too. So, apart from taking away the ambiguity of it, let me give you a two-part scenario here with a one-part solution. The first, related to leadership, you need to begin to see yourself as their leader. As the small group leader, you need to own that. It's not enough that you use the term, because you may use the term and not think about what it means. It's not enough that, you know, you're written down on some piece of paper in some spreadsheet we've got somewhere, small group leader. You need to take that responsibility. You need to begin to see yourself as their leader. 1 Corinthians 4, 14 through 16. If we can get that one up. 1 Corinthians 4, what do we do? Yeah, we got it. I am writing this not to shame you, but to warn you as my dear children, even if you've had 10,000 guardians in Christ, you do not have many fathers. For in Christ, I became your father through the gospel, and therefore I urge you to imitate me. This is Paul taking ownership, taking responsibility. I am your leader. You're not our leader. I am. I am. I care about you. I love you. I have loved you. This isn't our first conversation. It's our 500th. I am your leader. I love you. And I care about you. And I'm going to take responsibility for that. And while you might have lots of YouTube teachers, while you may have 10,000 YouTube pastors, you do not have many people that have taken spiritual responsibility for you. And I have become that in your life. I love you. I care enough. I am here, and I'm not going anywhere. It's important. It matters. It's not just important that you see yourself as a leader in their life. They have to see you as a leader in their life. They have to. I mean, it doesn't really do you any good if they don't at all. And so that little kind of made up conversation I had a minute ago is not your opening line to a visitor. I am your leader. I have become your father. Weird. Weird. Don't do that. That's those that you've built the relationship with. But as time goes on, this objective of leadership, it's twofold: recognition, and that is you recognizing you're a leader in their life, them recognizing that you are a leader in their life, and them being willing to see you as that leader and listen to what you have to say and submit and listen and care what you have to say. And the only way that's going to happen more than accidentally. I think there are times where accidentally it all just kind of works out and everybody said the wrong thing and it still works out because God's just so kind. We don't really want to bank on that strategy. I think that's kind of like the shot in the dark. There is a way to make it really clear, hey, I'm a leader, you want me to be a leader? There's a really clear way to make that real, and we call it a DTR, defining the relationship, still in an old, 2000 dating term, okay? The idea is this, it's really simple. You're starting a discipleship relationship with somebody who's probably never even heard the word discipleship. So they don't know Foreigner Fellowship, we do 1, 2, 3, they don't care about any of that, none of that matters to them, okay? And you're starting to invest in their life. At some point in that relationship, you need to define that relationship. And it's really simple. You as the small group leader, it must be you that initiates it. And it's really simple. It's really simple. You approach them with a planned conversation. And it's not haphazard. It's not on the fly. It's not in a text in passing. It's a conversation. This matters. This is like a really big decision. This is big. Okay? And you have a conversation with him and you say, listen, I've been investing in you. I care about you. Yeah, I do. Thank you so much. I want to ask you if I can be your pastor. I want to ask you for permission to be a mentor and a leader in your life who will be a pastor to you, who will be a small group leader, who you'll allow me to help disciple you. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean you're this? No, it doesn't mean any of that. It means that as long as the Lord is going to let us do it, I'm going to be a person in your life that's going to invest in you. We use this term taking spiritual responsibility. I care about you dearly. I want to take responsibility for you. I want to take spiritual responsibility to invest. I want to make sure somebody in your life is investing spiritually into your life. I want to be that person. How do you feel about that? That is weird. I don't want that. Okay. That's okay. But that's what all of this is about and unto, so that you know. Really, that's what this whole small group thing's about? That's what this small group thing's about. Can I think about it for a minute? You can think about it as long as you want, sure. And then have a follow-up conversation with them. A lot of times, as you're pouring into people, you will have been the only person in a long time or ever that's done that. And when you have this conversation with them, many times they go, yeah, yes. I thought that's what we were doing. Yes, do that. Please do that. But it's important to have the conversation because when there are difficult moments, it's really easy when it's all fun and light and fluffy, but there are going to be difficult moments too. And if you haven't had that conversation, it's going to be difficult to try to bring correction or to try to, point them in a direction they're not really excited about. And it's the Lord. It's the Bible. It's going to be really difficult if you haven't had that conversation because they're like, well, I was just coming to your Bible study thing. I didn't know you were like trying to pastor me. No, I think you need a pastor and I'd like to be that. How do you feel about that? Wow. And I think it would be helpful for all of you to have these notes, have these Bible verses, so that you can believe in what you're doing. So it's not just some random statement about stuff. The Son of God had 12 dudes. Jesus, 12 dudes. And a whole lot more influence beyond that, but 12 dudes. He's like, these are my dudes. I think you ought to have some dudes and dudettes. I think it's the model of the New Testament church. So you need to define the relationship. And if you don't know when to do that or how to say that or whatever, I understand, because that's weird. Just ask somebody. Ask your small group leader. Ask somebody in your small group that's had that conversation recently with somebody, how it went. Listen, I've had that conversation with I don't know how many people, and I've helped others have that conversation with way, way, way more. This is not as weird as we're making it. The reason that we even have to have the conversation is because how different church culture is in our country, that's a completely bizarre idea. It's a very biblical concept. I mean, Paul's the one that just said it. I became a father to you in the faith. So yes, I'm in your life right now bringing correction and bringing encouragement. And I'm there when you need it, and I'm there when you don't, when you think you don't, but I'm there. Step in when it's time. That's what this means. Taking spiritual responsibility, step in when it's time. Here's what I mean by that. In junior high, the relationships were all immature. All of them, 100%. They're all immature. And we had these weird expectations. Well, if they want me to come to the party, well, then they'll ask me. And if it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, if they really like me, then they'll call me. It's all weird and boo. In a leadership role, leaders lead. Leaders initiate. Leaders get involved. You don't have to wait to get involved. Don't wait. If you're in their life, don't wait when they're sick. Well, if they want me involved, they'll call me. Go get involved. You're their leader. Well, they had a baby, but I don't know if they really want me to be around. You're their leader. Go see them. You know, well, they're having trouble in their marriage. I don't know if they really want me involved. Go get involved. You're their leader. Get involved. Step in when it's time. Now, that doesn't mean every second of every day of every issue, but there are moments where as a leader, don't wait to get invited. You were already invited when they said, yes, I want you to be my pastor. Get involved. Stick your nose in there. Hey, what can I do? How can I help? How can I pray? What can I, you know, do? Who needs what? Let me help you. Get involved. You're the leader. You initiate it. Don't wait for them. That's what leaders do. Leaders lead. Leaders take initiative. Invest in them. The ones that the Lord gives you are now your responsibility. Invest in them. Help them get to that next place in God. Love them. Pour into them. And I'll just warn you, this is going to take time and energy. Right when you don't want it to. That's the time it's going to take, the time you didn't want to give, not the time you did. The energy you didn't have, that's what you need to give it then. Those that you're taking spiritual responsibility for, invest in them. 2 Corinthians 12, we got that verse up. 2 Corinthians 12, 15 through 16. Here it is. Technology. I say words and they magically appear on the screen. So much fun. I will gladly spend for you everything I have and expend myself as well. And Paul's banking on a principle. If I love you like that, if I love you more, are you going to get mad at me, or are you actually going to turn around and love me more back? If I love you more, will you love me less? No. But Paul's statement at the beginning of that, I will very gladly spend for you everything I have and expend myself as well. I will invest in you. I will pour into you. Remember when I started off and I was like, this whole small group leadership thing is a heavy deal? This is not a trite or light reality. I mean, we're talking about heavy stuff. You're talking about making a commitment to a handful of people where you're like, I am there. You need me, I'm there. I'll drop everything, I'm there. What do you need? You can't make that commitment to too many people because you will let all of them down. This is heavy. He says, I will do it gladly. I will invest in you. I'll give you what I have. I'll go ask for what I don't have and try to give it to you. I will pour into you. I will invest in you because I care about your destiny in Jesus. I care that when I stand before the throne with you next to me and the Lord looks at your life, that you became everything that God intended for you. I care about your destiny in God. So I'm going to invest in you. Spiritual insight. Practical stuff in your life to make your life easier or make more sense or work better. I care. That's what investment looks like. And it's costly. It's costly. Time, money, emotional, energy, betrayal. It's costly. It just happens. It's how it is. It costs. And Paul says, I will do it very gladly. And this is the role of disciplers, to do it gladly, to invest. You pray for them. You get to know them as an individual. I want to transition here a little bit different here in just a second, but I just want to say this. Part of what makes small group discipleship so much fun and so totally unexpected, so much happens that is unexpected, is because you're dealing with individual human beings that were created in the image of God. And each one of them is different. And what works with human being number one is the worst idea ever for human being number two. And they're married. Worst idea ever. Worst idea ever. You got to get to know the individual. So small group discipleship, relational discipleship, it's knowing the human, that one, that soul, that individual. What is their temperament? What are they like? How do they respond? Because the way that you will disciple that person is different than the way you'll disciple the person that's sitting in small group next to them every single week. Small group helps you kind of cast a wide net of some general lessons, some general ideas. But when it gets down to the nuances of individual application, it's different for everybody in your group. So you'd better know them. Know them. Who are they? What makes them tick? What are they like? That means spending time with them. It means caring about them as an individual. I can remember when I started all this, I was thinking so much about the reality of discipleship from a standpoint of like, from just this thought process of like raising up an army. And everybody's just going to all do the same stuff and act the same way and be the same. And yeah, that worked. That worked for about 13 seconds. Till I realized these people are individuals and they're different. And if I relate to this one the way I relate to that one, this one will cry. They're crying right now. How do I make that one not cry? That one, why are you crying? You're gonna have to work through this stuff. And then this one over here, if you don't yell at this one, you better yell. If you don't yell, it's not gonna work. You're not being loud enough. You have to yell in order to get through. And this, I mean, I don't mean yell, but I do mean the difference in the relationship, in the way that you speak, in the way that you encourage, how you approach it. I mean, you got to know the individuals, and that's what makes all of this a fun game with a blank canvas that can go anywhere. Because you don't even know who's going to be in your small group, who you're going to be discipling. But those that are going to come, they're going to be unique individuals. All right, I want to deal with two more things, and we'll jet out of here. You guys are great tonight. This is awesome. You're hanging in there. Dealing with their issues. They have sin, they have weakness, they have immaturity, and this is normal. One more time. They have sin, they have weakness, and they have areas of immaturity, and this is totally normal. And it's your job as a pastor in their life to help them. Pray for wisdom. James 1:5, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who will give you wisdom. He gives it generously to all without finding fault. There are going to be times where you're dealing with their issues and you're going to need wisdom from God because you're not going to know what in the world to do with those issues. Weakness, sin, immaturity, normal. Ask them tough questions. Dealing with their issues. It's your job to be a measure of accountability in their life on the issues that you know are there. Issues they may not even like you knowing are in their life. You see it. You know it's an issue. You don't need to be mean or a tyrant, but you need to be involved in helping. It's your job to help them get to that next place in God. And the biggest thing that's in the way is that issue, the one they don't want to talk about, the one they don't like being asked about, the one that is hindering them big time in their walk with Christ, that's making them get fired from every job, that's making them be unliked by this person and that person. But it's an issue. It's your job. Ask them. Get in their life. Hold them accountable. Bear with their shortcomings. Romans 15:1. We who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. I'll just say it this way. Small group discipleship is a prescription to get irritated because you're dealing with flawed human beings who, though they were successful in that area last time, they are failing in it this time. It's your job in their life to be one that is safe. Bear with their shortcomings. It's okay to call them shortcomings. Paul uses the word the failings of the weak. I don't know that I'd approach them quite that way. I'm here to bail with your failings, weak person. Here I am. I think that's probably the wrong approach, but it's the right process of thought. You're weak in this area. That's okay. I will see you through this. Though it burns you and me and your neighbor again and again and again and again, I'm going to bear with the failings of the weak. That's what discipleship's about. Because yes, they're going to mess up. And yes, they're going to mess up. And yes, in their heart, do they want freedom? That's all you need. You bear with that failing. You bear with that weakness. And you help them through again and again and again. There are going to be times where you're going to have to say the hard thing. 2 Timothy 4:2 says, be prepared in and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage. With great patience and careful instruction. Did you notice how two of those three were bad? You're going to have to do this with great patience and careful instruction again and again and again and again and again and again. You're going to have to correct them, rebuke them, call them to repentance, call them to humility. It's your job to invest in them, to help them get further along in their relationship with God, to help them be better off after a year or two. And you're going to have times where you're going to have to deal with special issues in their life. I'm going to give you two, and then we'll get out of here. Two things. New circumstances. You've discipled these people that are in your small group with these crazy issues, and there's a new issue that comes up, and you have no idea how to deal with it. It's still your responsibility, though you've never done it before, to help them through that. It's part of the reason that you can bring in the cavalry called your small group leader. Hey, what'd you do when I did this? I got no idea. What? They said they did what? Yeah, you got to help them through it. It's your job to help them through new circumstances. And the second is to bring in other help when you need it. Again, your small group leader. It's the reason I'm not okay with us having small group leaders that aren't in small groups. Now, I know that means one more meeting a week, but leadership is a sign up for busy. That's what leadership really is. You want to lead, you want to be used by God, busy. That's what equal sign busy. Used by God, equal sign busy. But it's the only way for it to be safe because that small group leader needs a small group leader. It's the reason that we have the structure the way that we do.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.